Across the world, we like to say, thank God it's Friday. But for me, Fridays are often mostly murder. I'm not complaining. I'm just feeling important. So Fridays, I record my Cut the Clutter, as I'm doing now. Then I write my National Interest. And before going home, I also record the video version of National Interest. And some Fridays, just because somebody up there thinks that I don't have enough to do, an off-the-cuff arrives. So this Friday, for example, I also have a live off-the-cuff with the director of Foreign Institute of Medical Sciences, Dr. Randeep Guleria. So that punches a 40-minute hole into my evening. Once again, I will tell you, it is a lot of work, but never complain about having a lot of work, because only thing worse than having a lot of work to do is not having enough work to do. So having said that, I will talk about people and about a situation which is getting a lot of people to do work that they might not have imagined that they will have to do. That is evacuating or pulling out a 2 lakh ton cargo ship stuck in Suez Canal, which is like the jugular of the whole world between North Atlantic and Indian Ocean. So much traffic comes through the Suez Canal. And this monster of a ship, it is 1,300 feet. So this is, if you see, much taller than the Sardar Patel statue, if that is one measure. But New York Times reminds us that this is taller than the Empire State Building. So that big a ship with 20,000 containers on it, 2 lakh tons of weight, filled with fuel because it had just set out on sail after refueling. Now this ship has got stuck because of winds and bad weather. It just got twisted and got stuck. Now because of this, this entire traffic, the sea traffic in that region has stopped. Look at the map of the world and see where Suez Canal is. So Suez Canal is about 193 kilometers between the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. Now, if this connection was not there, you would have had to drive around or sail around all of Africa, through South Atlantic, all of Africa, come all the way around and then come towards Asia. What this does is, this sends you straight from the Mediterranean into the Red Sea, and you can come down Red Sea, which is about 2,250 kilometers. You can come down Red Sea and you can then come into the Gulf of Aden and come into Indian Ocean or Arabian Sea. I mean, that is where, if you see the map of the world carefully, that is where Djibouti is, at Gulf of Aden. That is the narrowest point at the end of the Red Sea, where Red Sea opens out into Indian Ocean or Arabian Sea in this case. So no surprises that that is where the Chinese have set up a naval base, at Djibouti. It's a choke point. So just as Djibouti is a choke point, the big choke point is Suez, because Suez also sits in the middle of a very conflict-prone zone. And I will tell you a little bit about what happened in Suez in the past in only very little detail. So this ship is now stuck. At this point, 13 other ships are stuck, which are halfway through the canal. So they are waiting, hoping that this ship will be pulled out. You've seen these pictures that people are making fun of. One poor excavator trying to free up the ship from sand. People made so much of fun of that excavator that somebody has even set up a Twitter handle in the name of that excavator. I think it is something like, I'll try my best, or count on me to try my best. But the fact is that this ship is stuck. It will be pulled out at some point. Possibly they will have to empty out a lot of the fuel to reduce its weight. They'll have to remove a lot of the containers again to reduce its weight. Its weight, and also empty some ballast tanks and things. I mean, those are things about shipping I don't really understand very well, and nor do we have to, because people who know the job are doing the job. Now, look at this ship, and this is a realization. A lot of people initially started talking about the fact that all 25 crew members on the ship are Indian. They are actually Indians make very good mariners, and Indian shippies, as they are called, are in demand across the world because India has good colleges that give you training for that give you marine training. So what in sort of in our common usage was called merchant navy or merchant marine, that's a profession that Indians have taken to very well. So all 25 are Indians, all 25 are safe and healthy, but it was also made into some kind of a subjective derision that you put 25 Indians to take a ship, maneuver a ship that size through any passage which is measurable, which is not immeasurable, right? You can expect them to get stuck because you know why? Indians never follow the traffic rules. So you can make fun of our fellow Indians, but please don't. Because this ship also had Egyptian canal authorities, pilots on board. Because driving through the canal is a complex operation. There are many other ships also. The canal also at one point for about 32 kilometers has a V shape. Because President Sisi, when he was in power in Egypt, he spent about $9 billion to build another kind of extension or a kind of split lane in the canal to double its capacity from 49 big ships per day to 97 big ships per day. Now, this ship is actually stuck in the narrower part of the canal. Now, these pilots then guide a ship in and out of the canal. So if at all you blame somebody, you can blame the pilots, but not those poor Indian crew members. The unkind explanation could be, see, you Indians, you will always find someone to blame or a scapegoat. But the fact is that there were these Egyptian pilots on the ship. They are safe as well. Now there is a global effort that's going on to pull this ship out. Once again, as we were reading about this Indian crew members, I noticed something else, which I thought is fascinating and I should share with you. And I should give the credit where it's due. So Dhruva Jayashankar, who is a think tanker in Washington, works for ORF now. Sometimes we publish him also. So Dhruva Jayashankar wrote a tweet, and please see that tweet on our screen because he uses flags as simple. So I know that many of you are whiz kids with national flags, so you can check out without having to delve deeper. But basically what does it say is that this ship is an incredible tribute, one, to globalization, and second, to how globalized the shipping industry is. So this ship is Japanese owned, German managed, Taiwan operated, Panama registered. A lot of countries have their ships registered in Panama. It's a kind of registry of convenience. I don't understand that very well, but you will find a lot of the ships have Panama registration. So Japanese owned, German managed, Taiwan operated, Panama registered, Indian staffed fully. It is stuck in Suez Canal, which is in Egypt, 6th. Then it's coming from Malaysia, that is 7th country, and going to the Netherlands. So 8 countries. So one ship actually has close links with 8 countries. And not just that, if you opened out those 20,000 containers, you will in some ways possibly find almost 2/3 of the country's flags painted on them, if you were to paint the flags of the countries which were connected either with receiving or producing or selling those goods. So this is by itself, the ship is a picture of the globalized scenario. In fact, to such an extent that many globalization skeptics, I saw an article by I think David Goodman in the New York Times, which I'll share with you, that tell you that this ship's predicament exposes the limitations or the threats of globalization. So, dil belane ko galib, ye khyaal achcha hai. The fact is, his explanation is that this tells you that globally now we are so dependent on these globalized supply chains that one ship getting stuck in a canal can bring us to a standstill. So, the answer to that is stop globalizing and stop buying stuff from here and there and do everything on your own, Swadeshi, or the worst kind of Atmanirbhar. That's a bit like saying just because somebody has an accident, stop driving cars on highways. Or that reminds me also of on old days when we had politicians who were more fun than they are even today. So we had this gentleman called Maniram Bagri, who was a socialist, who I've seen कैंपेनिंग एज ए स्कूल किड इन हरियाणा एंड सेइंग कि भाइयों ये आपने बिजली क्यों लगा ली सब गांव के अंदर, बिजली लगाना बड़ी गलत बात है क्योंकि जब तक बिजली नहीं लगी थी तब तक कोई करंट लग के नहीं मरता था. नाउ दिस इलेक्ट्रिक पोल्स हैव कम, इवन इफ योर बफलो टचेज द पोल sometimes the buffalo can get electrocuted and if you touch it you can get electrocuted. So why do you risk getting electrocuted? You can do without electricity. Our generations had done without electricity. So that is an explanation like that. We don't go into that. This ship now is stuck in Suez. Why is Suez so important? In fact, there are some other things also causing clutter about the ship. Is its name Evergreen or Evergiven? So the company that owns the ship, its name is Evergreen. The ship's name is Evergiven. So please be sure of that. Now the fact is that 10% of global trade passes through Suez Canal. So until the Suez Canal came, the passage between say the Western countries and the Eastern countries or the North and the South was very circuitous. Suez Canal has cut that distance for ships by about 9,000 kilometers, depending on how you calculate, 8,500 to 9,000 kilometers. It's a lot. And remember, Suez Canal came in late 19th century. In fact, it was inaugurated in 1869, took about 11 years constructing. Thousands of people died. Some estimates tell you that more than 30,000 people died just building it because a lot of them were indentured slave labor because this was built by Western countries. It was an Anglo-French kind of operation because the Middle East had a very mixed up history at that point of colonialism. So this canal was inaugurated in 1869 at a time when all civil traffic, passenger traffic was also by ships for almost 80-90 years after that. So it also reduced your passenger traveling time between east and the west or north and the south by that much. So this canal was a big boon. Also, because it saved so much time and so much money and so much fuel and so much risk, it also was a source of revenue. So it earned a lot of money. So this canal was owned by a multinational company in which several governments had the stake. These are British, French, etc., etc., mainly European, and this canal would then earn revenue from ships passing by and was quite profitable, as you would imagine. It was in 1956 that Gamal Abdel Nasser, the revolutionary Egyptian leader and a friend of Jawaharlal Nehru's, one of the three titans who formed the non-aligned movement, the Trinity of non-aligned movement, Nasser, Tito and Nehru, in fact, in Delhi. I live next to a part of the Ring Road in Delhi, which outer Ring Road, which is named after Gamal Abdel Nasser. I don't believe that they would be naming new landmarks in Egypt anymore after Nasser. Nevertheless, so Nasser in 1956 was building the big dam on Aswan, on Nile River, and that was costing a lot of money. So he wanted these Western countries to finance that dam. At the same time, his politics, because he was from the Ba'ath Party, he was socialist, very left of center, it was the Cold War period, his politics leaned towards the Soviet Union. Because he was leaning towards the Soviet Union, Britain and France decided not to finance his Aswan Dam project. When that happened in 1956, Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal. He said, this now belongs to me, my government, just as Mrs. Gandhi had done, say, with the banks. All these banks, which we now call PSU banks, not State Bank of India, that was always a government bank. She overnight said, these are government companies, or HPCL, BPCL, as you see them now, Oil India, these were all foreign companies, which she nationalized overnight and said, these are my countries. So Nasser said in 1956 that Suez Canal is my country's property and I will now raise my revenue from shipping that goes past it and use that money to build my dam. And that is what led to the big Suez crisis. The British and the French, the Israelis first came in, as you would expect, and then the British and the French joined in. It became quite a nasty little war and the UN intervened. And that is when a Canadian statesman, who was the Canadian Secretary of State at that point, Lester Pearson, he came in and he proposed a formula whereby British and French forces will be withdrawn, Israelis will also withdraw, and traffic will be restored. In fact, because he was given the credit for having stopped that war and brought about peace, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for that year. So, contemporary history of the world has been built around Suez Canal. It took Nasser about a year to clear up the canal, because when he nationalized the canal and he got into trouble with these countries and they came in showing their muscle power, he sank a lot of ships in the canal to block the canal. Now, in this case, as we know, with Ever Given, nobody had to sink a ship, and mercifully everybody is safe, but it has blocked the canal because ships are so big now and ships are so heavy now, because these are container ships. Each container has a lot of weight. Now, this carried on. In 1967, there was further trouble. We know there was a six-day war. The Egyptians would not allow Israel to use the canal. Now, Israel is not next to the canal. There is the big Sinai Peninsula. Egypt is an interesting country. Some of it's in Asia, a lot of it's in Africa. So through Sinai Peninsula, if things were all okay between Israel and Egypt, as they more or less are now, Israeli traffic could go in and Israeli shipping could make use of the canal. But Egypt wouldn't allow it, and because they wouldn't allow it, Israelis would start interfering. That led to, among many other things, the six-day war in 1967. After which Suez Canal was again blocked by the Egyptians. And that led to a lot of crisis in the world. Later, another war took place in 1973, the Yom Kippur War, after which came the oil shock. And again, the global economy went into a tailspin. First, the Suez Canal is blocked, and then oil shock. So all these tankers also then had to run. Oil was expensive and the tankers had to take a much longer circuitous route. That was settled somewhere around 74, 75 when this canal was opened. Once again, various countries had to, big countries, big powers had to send their minesweepers, etc. to clean up the canal, because in the war, both sides had mined it heavily. So this canal has a checkered history. It is now, after so many years of peace, because Israel and Egypt signed up their own peace accord, the Camp David Accords. After that, Israel turned over the Sinai Peninsula entirely to Egypt, because that had been captured in the Six-Day War in 1967. They decided to recognize, Egyptians decided to recognize Israel. So those two countries are not at war anymore. So Egyptians thought, for good reason, that now peace had descended sort of on a permanent basis in this region. And that's why they invested this $9 billion in the canal between 2011 and 2016 and built this other lane. So they want to now make this canal a multi-lane canal. So that is the story of this canal and how big an economic value and how big an economic and strategic value as well as target it is.